Imagine if getting medical advice was as easy as going to the supermarket. Well, in the States, it is, with some stores taking on nurses as staff. This is just one of the ideas Dr. Frances Hughes brought to her chat with Ellen Lee Beter. Frances is the Chief Executive Officer for the International Council of Nurses. She's previously held senior leadership positions with the World Health Organization and most recently as the Chief Nursing and Midwifery Officer to the Queensland Department of Health.
From your role as Chief Nurse in New Zealand, you went on to work for the World Health Organization. What did that role involve?
I worked for World Health on contract for Manila and also for headquarters in Geneva, and I established and set up the Pacific Island Mental Health Network, and that was working with 16 countries in the Pacific to help them address the mental health needs of the Pacific.
What sort of mental health needs do we see in the Pacific?
They're similar to most other countries. It's just they have different challenges and complexities because they're smaller and often isolated, and they've got cultural difference, but you know, you have the same issues. You have the main mental disorders like depression, schizophrenia, bipolar. You have mixed up with often addictions and drug issues and alcohol issues. You have across the spectrum between young and old, and you have the issues of access and affordability. So that's a big issue in countries like that have more money and a bigger, have better infrastructure. You maybe have more access to talking therapies, you have more access to treatments, and you have more access, follow-up. That's got to be contextualised quite different in countries which maybe don't have clear mental health strategies and plan, don't have protections for consumers by law, like mental health acts that protect consumers, as well as ensure that they have effective and adequate treatment.
You said a lot of that work in the Pacific Islands is about getting governments on board.
Yeah, it is.
Is it quite similar to, say, Australia and New Zealand in getting governments to implement policy, or are there separate challenges that you see in the Pacific Island governments?
Well, you've got to realise there's no one culture in the Pacific. So there's five, I suppose. There's Micronesia, which is up the top, which is really under the auspices of the US. So this is Palau, Marshalls, and Federated States of Micronesia. Then you've got Melanesia. So you've got the PNGs, and you've got the Solomon Islands, Vanuatu's, and then you've got the Polynesia. And then you've got Australia and New Zealand. Now, we're all very different cultures. So it really depends on values of the culture, understanding of mental illness. Some of the understanding is still very much spiritual based. Some of it is based on devils and spirits, which is a cultural understanding, which you have to accept, and that's a cultural issue. Some of it is that the actions that there's no need for human rights protection, that because there's inadequate laws, as I said before. So you need to, all this is contextualised in countries, but regardless of the culture, individuals need to have some protection and access and affordable services if they're mentally ill.
Talking about that cultural aspect of mental health, how do you balance, I guess, the Western treatment of how we approach mental health with balancing the spirits and all those cultural aspects?
I think you work. East meets West, so to speak. You know, we have the same in India, with Arubic traditional practices. Every country that's got Indigenous people has traditional practices. And the Western style of medicine and healthcare is only relatively new to these cultures. Some of them need to work in partnership. You work in partnership with consumers and cultural leaders so that you bring the best of the best from both sides.
So after your work with the WHO, you then moved on to Queensland Health, and you were the Chief Nurse and Midwifery Officer for Queensland Health. I understand that the Queensland, the nurses and midwives you inherited when you first started that, you managed to change it into something quite different by the time you finished there.
I basically took the government agenda and operationalised it. And so I showed evidence of nursing. I profiled what nurses were doing. I ensured I had good data and information. I dealt with when there was arguments about whether they should slash nursing, cut nursing. I produced evidence about how foolish that can be for outcomes for consumers, how it's not cost effective to slash and burn nursing. But I had to do that in an evidence-based approach. It's not you can't be emotional about this stuff because it's often an economic argument. It's coming down from Treasury or finance people. So I needed to write and be able to produce data and information. So I did a huge lot of work on profiling why we should be investing in advanced practice, nurse practitioners, why we should be reducing red tape around nursing, why nurses need to work to their full scope of practice, why that we needed to look at how we could see nursing in a more economic modelling, not just a cost on the budget, but actually an investment. So, yeah, over 4 years I did a great deal of work and developed strategies, a nursing strategy, made sure that nursing was populated in all sorts of other government documents. And we ended up, and I didn't do this alone, I had a very strong partnership, good partnership with the Queensland Nurses Union. Early last year, when the new government came in, we got nearly $500 million of investment into nursing.
Wow, that's an excellent achievement.
But that was through galvanising and bringing together the best of nursing from the other state. The Queensland Nurses Union, working in partnership with them, we produced and were able to show that we should be investing in nursing.
Where does this idea come from that it is good to slash and burn nursing?
It's because we're the largest item in salaries on the spreadsheets in any hospital and health system. We are. So sometimes it's like low-hanging fruit to people that don't know any different. They say the easiest things to cut is wages and salaries. So we'll either dumb down nursing or bring in cheaper people to do the same job. Well, that's just foolish. We have enough research around the world with, 40 to 50 countries where if you start reducing the role of the RN, replacing them with less skilled workers, you have a blowout of quality and actually you can kill patients. There's no, the registered nurse, the amount of clients and patients that they have, if you increase the numbers that they have, their mortality goes up by 7%. And we know that that's how we get the nurse ratio argument. So there's enough evidence around that through large data sets of information. And so, we also know that if you have less skilled workers and you don't have the RNs, you get other effects like falls, medication errors, failure to rescue clients. So we've got a lot of data and information. The issue is, why aren't the services taking any notice of it? Why do people still think they should slash and burn nursing? They don't do that. They're not thinking about models of care. They're not thinking about different approaches. They don't even think about why they need, why they keep having to do practices which really they could do better in the community. So you could do, there's a lot of things that can be done different through models of care.
Do you think governments listen to evidence?
Politicians do what they need to do to stay elected. That's what they're there for. Do you do get alignment at times where you get absolute alignment that they will put the belief about what they should be doing for the public who voted them in, and good government strategies, good public policy, and they can do fantastic things. But at times, they turn over very quickly, politicians turn over, and they just get caught up in the politics rather than the policy. And they should be concentrating more on the policy, because you can't turn on and off healthcare. You can't turn on and off nursing.
Healthcare is kind of one of those interesting things, because if you're a politician, it's you know, highly, highly unlikely that you've never stepped foot in a hospital. And whenever you do go to hospital, it is the nurses that you see.
I know. But the issue is most of the time is organised medicine that they listen to.
What's organised medicine?
Well, the medical AMAs of this world.
Australian Medical Association.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They listen to them and they don't, and they're not actually seeing the full picture of healthcare. Nurses are not doctor servants. They haven't been for centuries. We are legitimate, well-educated, highly professional beings functioning with or without medicine around us. We are naturally good team players and we work well in MDTs. But
what's MDT?
And multidisciplinary teams with others like physios and allied health and things. But it comes a time when we cannot continue with the expenditure that's occurring at the moment in healthcare. No countries can afford it. Consumers can't afford the co-payments. They can't afford the private medical.
Do you see the scope of nursing widening over the next decade?
Nursing will go wherever the consumers are going. Nursing is totally the partnership role and responsibility of the nurse is to have a partnership responsibility with the consumer or patient. As consumers start to get more literate in health, start to have different technologies around them, there's absolute big changes. I've been in the US and spent 3 days with retail health clinics. These are nurses who are functioning in Walmarts and shopping and in big supermarkets.
Really?
They are doing amazing things. Now, they're not. Some of those consumers may never go near a hospital or what we may see as a traditional practices. And they're doing an amazing job, you know. So that's what's the most important. We've got chronic disease staring us down the barrel of diabetes, and these illnesses are going to suck up all our resources in the system. We have to manage them better. We have to work with consumers differently, and nurses are key to that.
So in that American example, you're going to Walmart,
yep,
grabbing some bananas,
yep,
you know,
yep, yep,
toiletries,
yep,
and
yep,
you go
yep
to see the nurse.
Yep, and it's a nurse practitioner. So these are the advanced nurses, so they do assessments, they prescribe, they have time with consumers. It's called convenient care. They're not the medical home of the consumers, but they are there for consumers that need them. And that's what we have to get real about. We can't keep provider-driven services, i.e. consumers can't always fit around when we want to look after them and when we want to treat them and when our opening hours. And so what the retail health has done is flip that over. They're open from 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And that's what it's about.
That's what the 21st century is all about.
Well, it is about it. You know what it's like. You know what it's like. I mean, I'm now living in Geneva and the whole place is shut on a Sunday. Oh, it's foreign to me. It's not convenient. But, you know, if we want to actually address the issues, we've got to meet consumers at where they are and what they're at, and not try and keep dragging them into our systems, making them drive miles, use more telehealth, use more technology. And nurses, is with millions of us, you know, there's not an area of the country that you can't find a nurse. And they will always be there, but they need to be valued. They need better working conditions. They need their evidence, their models of care, the way they were educated. They need to be able to implement those.
And this convenient care, that would, yep, drive down the cost of healthcare.
Huge. The data that came out of those sessions was amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, of course, private insurers now are reimbursing clients who go to those nurses. Because that's always the big issue. It's not that nurses can't do the work, and it's not that we're not educated to do the work, but usually people don't want to pay for it because organised medicine usually stops nurses getting reimbursed for doing the same services they do. Now, that's anti-competitive, but that's now been broken by this issue with the convenient care, because Walmarts and these big massive industries, they went and fought for it. And so now the insurance industries and payers in the US now pay the nurse practitioner for the same service as they would if they had it elsewhere.
Do we have any nurse practitioners in Australia?
Yeah, we have. You've got wonderful groups of nurse practitioners here. Wonderful. And, you know, largest group is in Queensland, but, you know, they're all over the country. And they deserve they deserve to be able to meet the consumer's need that they're educated to do. And the Medicare federal government has got to unleash the power to enable Medicare to reimburse nurse practitioners for services that they do, not just drip feed them bits of money.
Where do the nurse practitioners currently work?
All over the place. They're in hospitals, they're in primary care, they're in mental health, you name it, they're there. The issue is we need a bigger critical mass in Australia, but, you know, the needs of Australians are no different to other countries, especially Western countries, because most of our chronic diseases that are occurring are lifestyle related. It's what we've put in our mouths and the fact that we don't exercise enough, and we may have some genetic predispositions. But it's all related to exercise and diet and the way we cope with stress.
I'm just picturing the nurse practitioner in Walmart taking a look at your shopping trolley and saying, hang on a minute, do you really want those biscuits?
That's the thing about having convenient care, having nurses located in these types of places is it's much more relaxed for consumers. They can often, you can have discussions with them. And, you know, we've got to break the mould. And also, we don't need to keep building buildings for healthcare. We should co-locate where consumers are. And that's what I learnt from that, you know. Why do we need to build big medical rooms when we can actually co-locate into other premises where there's more likely to be more consumers?
Tell me about the new role that you've just taken up in Geneva.
I've been the Chief Executive Officer for the International Council of Nurses, which is 117 years old. It was formed in the late 1899 out of a suffrage movement. It's the first international professional women's organisation. It is membership-based, so it is about galvanising and bringing together nursing interests, advocacy issues across the world through national organisations of nursing. They're our members. It's based in Geneva primarily because that's where the UN and WHO are. We're global. And we have a key advocate for the voice. We are the voice of nursing across the globe.
We kind of touched on the cost of healthcare blowing out is one of the big global issues. What other global issues do you hope to tackle in this role?
Universal health coverage, the sustainable development goals are our big issues. Health-wise priorities, it would be things like antimicrobial resistance, HRH, human resource issues for nursing and workforce, mental health, ageing, immunisation. Yeah, I mean, they're just some of the ones that we're dealing with.
And that's it for this episode of The Chat. If you're keen for more, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review. It really helps. This show is produced with the support of the University of Technology Sydney and 2SER. I'm Nina Kopel. Thanks for your company.